Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to another exciting and informative edition of Atlanta Business Radio. I'm your host today, Ryan Redhawk McPherson. Thank you so much for joining me. And as always, we're broadcasting here from the beautiful Regis Executive Suites in sensational Sandy Springs, Georgia. Alongside me today is also executive producer and co-host of today's show, Allie G. Alex Gossett Shiflett, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Fantastic. It's Friday. We're wrapping up another week of Atlanta Business Radio. Had some
good week.
Yeah, good guests, good topics. And we got a headlining guest in here today.
Yes,
going to wrap up the week for us, a rock star in the
industry
in Atlanta. Yes. But before we get started, let's remind our listeners to check us out on social media. At Business Radio X on Twitter, and that is the network. You can also follow the program here today, Atlanta Biz Radio, Atlanta B-I-Z Radio. And do check us out on Facebook. We'll be snapping some photographs of today's guest and putting them up on Facebook later for you to enjoy and interact with us there. Without further ado, let's introduce to the program today, CEO and founder of Dragon Army, Mr. Jeff Hillemeyer. How are you, Jeff?
I'm good, Ryan. Alex, thanks for having me.
Fantastic. Thank you for joining us. So let's talk about yourself first, a little bit about your background. Where are you from and your backstory a little bit, if you would share with our listeners?
Sure, yeah. So I'm actually almost a native Atlantan. I moved here when I was 5 from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up here, ended up going up to UNC Charlotte to play tennis for college. Started my first company there in the dorm room and moved right back to Atlanta. So I'm a huge homer for Atlanta.
Was it a tennis-related company? That your first company?
No, not at all. No. Nope, it was web design. This was like 96, 97.
Okay.
I fell in love with building websites. That became my passion. Once I realized I wasn't good enough to go pro, which I wasn't even close.
Yeah.
But, you know, you go to college, you have dreams. It took me about a year to realize this is not going to work out.
Do you still play tennis today?
I teach my kids more than anything.
More, you get involved that way. That's good. So in the dorm room, started your first business, happened to be a web development company. Were you always interested in web design or computers, naturally?
Yeah, I had a Commodore 64 growing up. So I was a programmer. I went to school for computer science. My college roommate, Raj Chowdhury, was a graphic designer. And so the two of us would just start. This was like the early, early days of the web. And so we were obsessed with building websites at that point. It was just like this great thing where you could like create something and then the entire world can see it.
Right.
Of course, 4 people would see it, but at least the potential was there.
Yeah, the idea was there, right. And so you started that company, but you went on to finish school and then moved to Atlanta after school?
Yeah, I actually moved to Snellville where my parents were, set up the business in the basement there, unfinished basement, and basically eventually found my way into Midtown with the company.
And then what was your next adventure after that?
So Spun Logic was the name of the first company, and it took us about 10 years. Took us about 5 years to really figure out how to run a company. You know, we were 22, 23, eventually hit our stride and got to about 75 employees and sold the company in March of 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the beginning of a new sort of adventure where my old firm, Spun Logic, 2 other agencies were put together by a private equity group out of New York to create a new company called Engage. So that was sort of the next phase, was being a part of Engage, trying to do a merger, which is really difficult. And figure out sort of how to build that type of company. So
yeah, and that was 2008, and you began to work and learn all different types of aspects of managing a business, running a business, developing business,
having a board, having technically a boss. Like those were all new things for me, right?
Because
I had started I've never had a resume, so for me, like having an actual boss somewhere else was a difficult transition, to say the least.
Yeah, definitely. And then you went on to begin to kind of get out of that role, I guess, at Engage. And now, are you still involved over there?
Yeah, no. So 5 years later, in August of 2013, we sold Engage to Publicis Moxie.
Okay.
So that's when I exited and started Dragon Army. So yeah.
Dragon Army. And now, Alex, the name Dragon Army is cool in itself, but they describe themselves as a mobile experience agency.
Right.
So can you tell us what that entails?
We were wondering just exactly what that is.
Yeah. It's actually a new type of company. We're one part agency, which would work with, we have clients like Home Depot and Coca-Cola. We build mobile experiences for them.
For their organizations.
That's right.
Okay.
Yep. So that might be like a mobile app. It could be a mobile experience in retail. It could be a mobile website. So that's one side of the business. The other side is what we call the mobile studio, where we build our own apps and games, and we launch those directly to consumers. So we have like a both a services side and a product side of the business.
Okay. And then other organizations can use your mobile technology advancements, your secrets behind the scenes over there to help them engage with their clients or constituency a little further.
That's
but
right.
You're also developing the game side of things for people. So any games people have heard of that Dragon
sure,
Army
sure.
has produced?
Yeah, we've launched four different games. Two of them have done really well. They both happened to have robot themes. So the first was Robots Love Ice Cream. That was like our
Robots
first game.
Robots Love Ice Cream. Do your kids play this, Alex?
They should. They should.
I'm going to introduce them to it now.
It's a fun game.
Okay.
You play an ice cream truck driver defending the world from robots that are coming down to steal the world's ice cream. So it's a really fun kind of arcade type game. And then we launched two more games after that, Defend the Dam and Paper Trail. But then our last game, which we launched in January of this year, it's called Little Broken Robots, and that that game has actually done really well on iOS.
Robots.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
just the wave of the future, I guess.
What's your target audience for these games?
Yeah, so when we build games, one of my theories with the game studio is that they need to be able to build what they're passionate about and things that they're excited about.
The developers,
the people actually building the games, because it's an entertainment-based thing, and so my theory is let them build something that they're going to be super proud of and excited about. And so early on at Dragon Army, I was a little more heavy-handed in like, yeah, what's our demographic? And you know, these are words that these people don't even...
Right.
they're just trying to build something that's fun to play.
Yeah.
And I'm a marketer, so I'm like, hey, let's, you know, what range? So we really stay away from thinking beforehand about what type of demographic. And then once we start launching the game to beta testers, we start understanding, oh, wow,
This one resonates with a certain niche group more so.
Then we can market to that group and try to get it in their hands, but I let the creative process kind of run its
course. So, yeah, when you sit down at the creative table with your team and all your developers and you think, okay, let's do a new game. It doesn't start with, okay, we're targeting this group of people. Let's just do something fun, different.
That's right.
Robots. Is robots a theme that you hang
Not
on
really.
To?
No. It just happened that way. Actually, Little Broken Robots, the game we launched in January, started off as a zombie game. I mean, so it wasn't ever supposed to be robots. It just ended up that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't really come up with the ideas. We usually do like a 2-week game jam where the team spends 2 weeks and just comes up with
jam session.
Yeah. Different concepts every day. And at the end of that, there's a couple of prototypes. We start playing them, and the ones that are fun usually make their way to actual production.
And so that's got to be fun. The fun side of the thing, the developing, hanging out with those developers. They're a creative bunch in himself. But then you do take things a little more serious. I wouldn't say more serious, but going to these corporations and giving them their web or mobile web experience or an app experience, that is a little more, I would say, professional
in a sense, right?
So you may have to go sit down in a suit and tie and meet with them.
Well, let's not get crazy. I'm not wearing many ties these days.
Okay,
but yeah. We definitely have to dust off our clothes and go to the client meetings. The reason we built games is because when you look at mobile engagement, the number one activity in time spent and money spent in every category is games. It over-indexes. And the average age of a mobile gamer is somewhere between 28 and 30 years old, and it's 50% male, 50% female. Mm-hmm. Most people think of gamers as sort of a 17-year-old in the basement. It's actually, you know, normal people like you and I that are playing a lot of mobile games. So what we do is we build games and we launch them into the market on our own, but we study the behaviors of people who play those games, and we try to apply those to the corporate things that we do for our clients in order to help them achieve more engagement and better ROI.
Yeah.
It's really tough. You know, the mobile device is the most intimate experience you can have with your consumer, right?
Yes.
It's different than throwing up a billboard and running a TV commercial. This is like the thing that they look at before they go to bed and the first thing when they wake up. So studying the way that the more successful experiences happen and applying that to, you know, when a Coca-Cola wants to reach their consumers through mobile, it gives us an advantage to be able to actually have better results.
No, and we see that and hear that time and time again here in the studio, how people are developing the things we learn and the habits that people have with their mobile devices and apply those to whether it be marketing a new product or advertising or just engagement overall, the user experience. It's a theme we hear constantly.
Jeff, can you give us an example? I understand the games, but when you say you create mobile products for, like, example, Coca-Cola, can you just, like, give us an example of a mobile product you would create for them?
Sure, yeah. So for Coca-Cola, for instance, so what's great about mobile is it extends not just to marketing aspects, but it also extends to internal. So with Coca-Cola specifically, one of the things we built for them was a mobile app experience for their workforce globally as they travel. Coke has negotiated rates with Four Seasons hotels or deals at different restaurants. Mm-hmm. But it's very hard for their employees who go to Brazil to look that up and know what
or
deals
to know
are available.
It's even available.
Yeah. So we built a mobile app for their employees. They're, you know, tens of thousands mm-hmm. of worldwide employees to be able to quickly see, okay, I'm standing here. Where's the closest, you know, deal or situation that's been set up by corporate? So that would be one example. We've also, for Home Depot last year, they're a huge sponsor of College Game Day. Mm-hmm. And so we built a game actually for them. It's a cornhole game that you play with your phone. So we can range from very consumer sort of let's just get a lot of people engaging with us, like the Home Depot example, or very practical internal corporate reasons for mobile experiences.
A very good question for sure, because that does kind of break it down a little mm-hmm. further, and you could do something fun like a cornhole experience for those tailgaters.
Yep, that's
or
right.
those inter-office, inter-corporation types in traveling the globe.
That's
and
right.
needing to know what kind of benefits they can receive. So that's fantastic that you're able to apply that. So you really just listen to what the consumer needs,
that's
what the
right.
customer needs, and then build something around that.
Yeah.
So are you actively out there marketing Dragon Army, or do people just kind of organically find you?
No, we're definitely out there marketing the agency. There's not a lot of companies like us, actually nationally, but there's really not many in Atlanta where mm-hmm. we're laser focused on mobile. There's a lot of digital agencies that, you know, mobile's a part of the 10 different things they do. Mm-hmm. But for us, this is what we do. And so we're, you know, I would like to say we're some of the foremost experts in the space. So yeah, we're absolutely marketing the company and trying to make sure that at least we're on the radar of the companies in town that need help with mobile.
Right. It's certainly Home Depot and Coca-Cola know because they're in your backyard.
That's right.
But if they're, you know, Boeing out there on the West Coast may need your services, we want to make sure you're getting in front of them and they know that, you know, Dragon Army can provide results if needed.
That's right. Yeah.
So that's fantastic. Let's talk about the trends in the industry now. Mm-hmm. What are some of these latest trends? Mobile gaming just seems to be, you know, going at light speed, you know, month after month, year after year. You know, but where do you see, you know, things today?
Yeah. So there's all sorts of different directions to go on that question. It's a great question. A lot of people are talking about virtual reality and augmented reality. You know, virtual reality is when you're usually putting on a headset or some sort of goggles or glasses and you're seeing a completely new experience and it feels real. Augmented reality is when you're actually looking through the lens of your camera and you're seeing the world in front of you, but it's augmented, mm-hmm. which both of those are very, very interesting technologies. They're new. And so it's maybe a year or two out. Other things we study are, you know, like Snapchat, Tinder, Instagram, mobile apps and experiences that are really catching fire and usually with a younger demographic. But what you study is how are people using these? So like the Tinder experience, just as an example, who cares about the actual usage of Tinder? It's a swipe left, swipe right. Mm-hmm. People on mobile devices want something quick and fast. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you're searching for a car. Is it a better experience to have drop-down menus and have to hit five different things and hit submit to get a list? Or is it better to simply have pictures left, right? Yeah. And get to something that you like. So those are the kind of things there's sort of macro trends that we look at and we try to say, okay, well, if this is what people are doing, how do we, you know, use that to impact our clients' operations?
Right. You talked about the technology trends. You talked about the user experience trends and just the studying of it all. We recently heard in the studio here that someone was talking about the machine learning behind it all.
Sure.
So the more you millions of people use millions of products, but what is the kind of learning that we can take from that? And it'd be hard for a person to sit down and learn this, but computers can do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. The data around mobile from a marketing perspective is just mind-boggling. You think about it like, all right, so this morning we played a practical joke on our children. We got Dunkin' Donuts. So I went out and
I saw that picture right on Instagram or something, right? Yeah. And you put the vegetables in there.
That's right. So they were all excited. We lined them up and we opened it up and there was like, you know, avocado and pepper. And stuff.
Cruel.
It was great.
Yeah.
We gave them the real deal. But this morning, you know, I searched for Dunkin' Donuts at like 5:15 a.m. because I had to go pick up the donuts before. Turns out they're open at 5. But if I searched right now for Dunkin' Donuts, I have a different need than if I'm at 5:15.
On your mobile device, if you had to go
device.
For a search.
Yeah. Or where. Like, you know, so the ability for a phone to know context around why you're using it, where you are, what you did right before, what you're going to do after. Mm-hmm. Your phone knows all that stuff. It has your calendar. It knows your behavior. It tracks your steps. So this is data that we've really never had before.
Yeah.
So we're really working hard to build up that side of the business so that we can really come to clients and say, okay, now that you've gotten them to engage with you in the cornhole app or whatever it is, now we can learn so much more about them and be more relevant. I mean, to me, that's the key. A big topic of conversation in mobile right now is ad blocking. Everybody's freaked out because Apple's allowing you to block ads, and it, you know, marketers are worried. I think that's fantastic. Nobody wants more ads. What they're willing to do is interact with you if it's a relevant experience. And marketers are lazy. They're going to say, "Oh, I'm just going to run ads on ESPN's mobile site, and that's how I'm going to get in front of people." And that's a terrible way to look at it.
Right.
There's so much more potential now. So I'm actually a fan of, let's block all ads. Let's make it really tough for marketers to be stupid, and let's build a better relationship with our customers through mobile.
Yeah, for sure. Alex?
Yeah, I have a question about your company, like your like office space. I noticed on your website, you guys, your motto, team first, think positively, have fun. Mm-hmm. So I kind of picture your office like the Google office with beach balls and couches, no desk, and kind of a laid back atmosphere. What is it like?
Yeah, it's super laid back. I'm not a big believer in individual offices. About 6 years ago, I swore off ever having a personal office again because it disconnects you from the team. So we're very open. There's a dog running around the place. We grill out a couple times a week, it seems. And that also opens up communication. People talk more. So yeah, we definitely have a very open, very fun environment. We're not making sure people are in by a certain time. We have essentially a no vacation policy, meaning there's no policy. You take time when you want to take time.
So if I want to take a month off and go to Costa Rica.
We have a guy taking 2 weeks to go to Japan later this month. I mean, so
that doesn't count against him. He's not frowned upon in the office. And everybody was like, "Hey, where's Larry? You know, he's in Japan." Right. Well, darn it, I'm going to go.
Good for you. How many employees do you have?
We're about 15.
15.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sounds like a fun place to work. Are you
I like
hiring?
To think so. Yeah.
I think you have to be when you're in a creative environment like that. Yeah, I think it needs to foster that.
Right.
You know, if you're a financial advisor and you're trying to have people invest with you, you know, better have a mahogany desk in a $5,000 suit. You know,
that's right. Yeah, absolutely.
I have a feeling there's no suits.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, no. There's absolutely no suits.
Just when the bankers walk around. Right.
Right.
So that's great. So good culture over there. And we hear that a lot here. Again, culture is everything to recruit good talent, to retain good talent. What are some of those challenges you're finding when you're trying to develop this company and grow even larger?
I think recruiting great people is always going to be the number one challenge. Mm-hmm. We work really hard on, you know, using the all-stars that we have now. You know, we're 15, so we have the ability to have 15 great people, right? I've been in this industry long enough where I can go, okay, this is a great account person, or this is a fantastic strategist. Let's bring them in and make them part of our core at the beginning. And now it's, let's make sure that we're bringing in the right people to add to that group. So recruiting is always going to be, you know, if not our top, one of our top objectives, regardless of, you know, if we're growing fast or not, because I want to make sure that we have a steady pool of people who are, have been exposed to the company, have taken time to see us and get used to us. So that's one thing. I think another thing is just educating clients on mobile. What's happened is, so you're seeing trends of the web did this, then social did this, now mobile's doing it, where it's like, oh my gosh, I got to have a website. So you throw up a website and you don't really know why you created it. You just have to be on the web. Same thing happened in Facebook, right? Twitter. Suddenly, boom, I have a Twitter account. Well, now I got to maintain this thing. And why do I even have it?
Yeah.
Same thing with mobile. We talk to clients. It's like, yeah, we created an app 2 years ago and then we created another one. We don't really know why. So you have to educate them and say, okay, well, here's how you can think about mobile. And oftentimes it's not an app. Sometimes it's just a very thoughtful process of, okay, we're going to make sure any content we're creating is optimized for mobile. Baseline. Let's do something like that. So a lot of it is getting the time and the space to educate clients, because the problem is they already have huge digital agencies, for instance, talking to them about mobile in a, I would say, a not as sophisticated way. They're trying to get that app built. And so that's one of our challenges, is how do we get in front of clients and really make sure we have time to spend with them and say, okay, here's how you should be thinking about mobile.
Yeah. And separating yourself from all the others talking about this, you guys are really bringing a unique strategy and approach to these solutions.
Yep.
And so differentiate yourself from the other players out there is probably a challenge, I imagine, as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think the fact that we're laser focused on mobile is already a differentiator just unto itself. Like, it, you know, it is an easier conversation to say, you know, we don't mess around with social anymore. We did. We don't do web. We did. We just think about mobile all day. So clearly we're sort of the ones that would have the largest voice at the table. The game differentiator for us is fantastic. So so not only can we say, look, we've got a game studio, right? So anyone can say, well, we think about games when we do your strategy. But do you actually have a game studio and people who understand games, or is it marketers trying to pretend like they're gamers, right? So that's one thing that I think it does gives us. Once we have time with a client and they see some of the results we've had based on that strategy, it becomes a pretty attractive proposition.
And let's talk about on the horizon for Dragon Army 2016 and beyond. What are some of your goals and objectives long term for this thing?
you know, we're pretty deliberate on growing the company. I feel like we need to get to a certain size that allows us to have the scale to work with anybody on the planet. Our vision at Dragon Army is to be the best mobile partner in the world. So I think we're early to the game now. We're small, obviously, but I think there's a white space in the industry right now. And there's not many like us that are just heads down in the space. So we've got a pretty big vision, obviously, and a plan to get there. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's just laying the seeds and making sure we're making smart decisions as we go.
I think the industry's trending your way in that manner as well. So continuing to do good work, you know, setting yourself and now as a good foundation can only bring more business and more relationships as the industry, again, trends in your direction and in your favor. So let's turn the conversation a little bit to Atlanta now. And again, you moved here years ago. You're practically a native, I would say. Mm-hmm. You weren't born here, but you certainly made home here, raising a family here, growing a business here. So, but what's important to you about Atlanta and the community and the culture here?
I think Atlanta is the best city in the country. I think that for several different reasons. First of all, quality of life's fantastic. Mm-hmm. The weather's great. You get all the seasons. It has fantastic universities. It has a city, you know, we're the third most Fortune 500 companies. We've got Georgia Tech. We've got all these great things about the city of Atlanta, and they're working on the traffic.
but we're still like, I saw a study recently, only 13, we're not even the top 10 of bad traffic. As much as we complain about it, it could be worse.
That is true.
So it could be better too. It could be better.
It will be. I have faith that it will be.
One day.
I do too.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, we've got all the major sports teams. We got everything you could want in a city, the airport, right? The world's
beautiful
greatest.
International destination.
Absolutely. So I think Atlanta, you know, my goal would be, but part of the conversations that are happening now in town are, you know, how do we become the next Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. I like to think of how do we just take what Atlanta has and continue to foster it and take care of it and make it this special place. Yeah. I've seen a stat that right now for millennials, we're the number one place for them to move. More millennials are coming here than anywhere else.
Fantastic.
And I think that's a great thing. Because think about millennials. Now millennials go up to 35 years old. So they're starting families. And this is a great place to do that. Yeah. So one of my goals would be to keep more of our Georgia Tech students, for instance, staying here, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of them leave, then they come back. The head of our game studio got a degree at Georgia Tech, went out to Silicon Valley for 6-7 years mm-hmm. building games, and then came back to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. That's when we snagged him. How do we get that guy to stay?
Yeah, right.
Start a game studio here from day one. That would be a good goal.
Yeah. And we do hear this a lot compared to Silicon Valley. And, you know, I'm born and raised in Atlanta. I'm a third generation in Atlanta, so I'm partial to Atlanta. So when I say this, you understand why. But Silicon Valley, that's all they have is the tech space. Mm-hmm. Atlanta has so much more, you know, and we're growing and we have room to grow. So they'll always and forever be known as, you know, the hub of tech, you know, great, smart people, great. But we have so much more to offer culturally, community-wise. You know, we're a bunch of little cities connected in one major city.
Yep, that's right.
You know,
I totally
agree.
And
I love that. Yep. So you can, like, I live in Alpharetta. I love Alpharetta, but I love Atlanta too. So I just think it's great to be involved in that sense. So, so it's a great for startups, great for entrepreneurs.
Totally agree. Yep.
Any resources that maybe you leaned on in the beginning here in Atlanta or continue to lean on as you grow your businesses?
Certainly at the beginning, not so much, but I think the landscape for starting companies in Atlanta has gotten much, much better. The Atlanta Tech Village is fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's in Buckhead. That's where we started Dragon Army. It's a fantastic place. Literally, the game studio, the head of the game studio that I mentioned that moved back to Atlanta had read an article about the Tech Village, and that pushed him over the edge to move back.
Oh, good.
So I think that's, to me, a great thing. The Chamber, I'm on the board of the Chamber, the Metro Atlanta Chamber, and I think they're doing a fantastic job trying to foster innovation with corporations, with startups. They've got Choose ATL, which is a great movement for bringing millennials to Atlanta and keeping them. So I just think that there's a lot of great things going on, a lot of great resources. If you are a startup here, there are so many opportunities for you to jump into one of these incubators, partner up with people and get going. The community is really starting to come together.
That's fantastic for sure. So fostering good entrepreneurship here in the Atlanta area. How about a couple of questions about entrepreneurship now? So from your perspective, being a serial entrepreneur, when starting a business for someone who may be just starting, is it good advice to have a business plan or not have a business plan?
Yeah. So this is an interesting question. I think if somebody wants to start a company, okay, if that is their goal to start a company, their passion, everything that about them says, I have to start a company. My number one piece of advice would be start your company today.
Just get started.
There is no, look, a business is great. It's great to have a vision and a plan for it. It becomes something that is a wall between you starting your company where you're saying, okay, I need to really get this fleshed out before I start my company. The problem is you're never going to be able to put on paper a solid reason to start a company, because it's almost always a bad idea because you're almost always going to fail, right?
There's 90, gonna be holes in your plan.
You
all
just
the way
don't know what you're getting into. 95% of startups don't make it. So, or maybe even more. So all the time you're going to waste planning your business, looking at research, who cares? Start your company. Every company pivots. Everybody has to learn along the way. Get building your product or building your service, get it in front of customers. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely a fan of a business plan. What I do think, though, is you need to have an end goal right out of the gate. What okay. are you trying to build this up to IPO? Are you trying to build a lifestyle business that you just go, you know, you love what you do and you're happy, which is a fantastic reason to start a business, and you just want to pay the bills?
What is your ends to the means there?
That's right. You need to know that, because then every decision you make is going to be in that direction. It's very different the way you run a company that you're trying to build a lifestyle business or that you're trying to actually get to an acquisition down the road.
Yes. Alex?
Yeah, I want to ask my high-low question. What's the best part of your job and what's the worst part of your job?
Oh, wow. Great question. I think the best part of my job is building the culture and bringing in people that I feel are going to strengthen our company. So it's the people side of the business. At the same time, probably the worst part of the job is when, you know, you have to do the other side of that people business, when somebody doesn't fit, or, you know, your business has changed and you have to make changes. And that's always tough, no matter how many years. I think I'm like 18 years into running companies. That's always a hard thing and a difficult thing. So I try really hard to put our company in a position where we're hiring smartly, hiring slowly, really making sure we're bringing in the right people when the time is right, putting them in the right place so that we don't have to make those decisions. But that's definitely the most difficult part.
What are some tips on hiring the right person for your company?
Yeah, well, first, I think, you know, you mentioned our values, team first, think positively and have fun. I think a company needs to really have a good grasp on those, and not just the CEO, but everybody in the company. We spend a lot of time talking about those at company meetings. I share those with everybody. Once people know that and you start hiring against that, suddenly you have a new lens of bringing people in. You know, when we sit down with people, you know, if they're telling us they've got great experience saying building mobile, and we say, what's one of the best successes you've had? And it's me, 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 I. Well, that's probably not a team first type of person, or somebody who's like talking in a way that they're talking about how bad everything else is. Even if they're excited about your place, if everything's like, yeah, this was terrible. Well, that person's probably not going to fit our positivity value. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a great lens that companies miss. Even if they feel like they've even defined their values, if their employees aren't embracing them and have ownership over them, then they're probably not hiring against that. So we have a pretty thorough hiring process where I try to get different people in different departments to sit down and just have conversations. And afterwards, those are the three things I'm going to be asking them. How did you think they line up against having fun? Are they going to be carefree? Are they going to be political? Like, we need to know those things coming in.
Yeah, because 6 months down the road, once they're embedded into the corporation, if they don't work out, you've got a lot invested in them, and
you
got to start over, and you don't want to, you know, have that wake up call then. Better to have it on the front end during the application process.
Yeah,
for sure.
And I will tell you, my belief is you can't teach those values. And that doesn't mean people that don't have those values aren't good people. Right. It just means they're not a good fit for us. I can teach someone how to build a mobile app. Mm-hmm. I can teach them how to create a business development requirement doc. Like, I can teach them that stuff.
Right.
I can't teach someone to be a positive person.
Right.
And that's
positive.
Just someone who's not positive, just not going to make it at our company.
That's exactly right. And so you're doing great things over there, and you got a lot going on in entrepreneurship, but you've mentioned a couple times you sit on the boards and everything. And so it's important to give back and get involved with the community. So what are some ways you're doing that personally, as well as a company giving back to the community?
Yeah, this is something I'm really passionate about. I went through Leadership Atlanta in 2012, 2013, and it just changed my whole life. Like, you know, it really opened my eyes to the things that I should be doing with my time. So a couple of different things. I started a nonprofit last year called 48 in 48. And we, in October, built 48 nonprofit websites in 48 hours.
Right, down there at General Assembly, where it was? I remember seeing the headlines on that.
Yeah, Pond City Market. Yep. Yeah, it was great. Now I've got an executive director running it. We're going to do Atlanta again in October and New York in November.
Outstanding.
And the idea is next year do maybe 5 or 6 cities. So, you know, basically what happened was we had about 200 volunteers come into, you know, one area, and for 2 straight days just worked their butts off to create these websites. It was fantastic. So the nonprofits got a lot from it. The volunteers got so much out of it. It just brought the community together to help itself. And so often these people aren't asked to use their actual skills to help nonprofits. So I want to infect that into every city I possibly can. So that's one way. I'm on a couple of boards. big things like the Metro Atlanta Chamber, small things like Central Outreach and Advocacy Center, which helps homeless. So I try to have my hands in a lot of different things to really see how we can help.
Yeah, because that's important. Bringing the community together, getting involved, and staying connected with some social good is great for personally and professionally as well.
For sure.
So what's next for you? I mean, where can people find you? Or, yeah, you know, what's going on with the rest of 2016?
Where people can find me is my blog. It's jeffhillemeyer.com. I blog about all these things on there, a lot about entrepreneurship and lessons that I go through, lessons that I want to share with people. Talk about Dragon Army, talk about 48 and 48. So that's a great place, or Twitter's always good. You know, I think for 2016, at least for me personally, it's continuing to work on optimizing my time and being more efficient. I have 5 kids at home. So on top of this, I try to be home by 5 or 5:30.
And you're taking care of your nephew today.
That's right. My nephew is here hanging out with me. Right. So, you know, for me, it's I get up early. I try to knock stuff out. I try to be home for the kids for dinner and stuff. So it's just continuing to find the right things to say yes to, yeah, and the right things to say no to, and do as much possible good, both for Dragon Army, but for the community as I can.
Well, what are some of those secrets from your perspective on the work-life balance? Mm-hmm. You know, as we all struggle with that, you know, but you seem to hold it all together, a successful company, rich family life. Nah. What are some of those secrets?
Yeah, it would appear everything's under control. Well, you know, so for me, I get up at 4:50 every day, weekends included, because that way, even on the weekends, that can
why
get...
4:50? Why not 5?
Yeah. You know?
4:55.
Or 4:30, right?
I don't know. You know, actually, I do know why. Because I started getting up at 5, and then another guy that I know was I was asking him his habits, and he's like, yeah, I get up at 4:50. And I can't even remember why he did it, but I'm like, oh, man, now I got to get up at 4:50.
Okay, so you're competitive at heart, too. Oh, you got that tennis background.
Super competitive. Yeah, right. But, you know, that gives me a couple hours on the weekends before the kids get up. Then I can put the stuff away, or just during the day. It allows me to work from, say, 5 to 5, get, you know, 11, 12 hours in, and then be home for the family. And yeah. If I make it past 9 o'clock at night before I go to sleep, it's amazing.
Yeah. Well, where do you find motivation in all that? What really inspires you? Is it other successful people? Is it you find inspired from reading books? Are you a faith-based guy? I mean, where does this inspiration and motivation come from?
Yeah, that's a great question. I read a ton. I do learn lessons from successful entrepreneurs. The thing that is interesting is that the people that I read about, Jobs and Elon Musk, and, you know, what's interesting about them is they're mostly all not nice people. They're mostly very, very mean to their employees, and they will achieve things that I will never achieve because they're amazing and geniuses, but they beat people down to get the most out of them. So I read these books. I really enjoy the books, and I'm inspired by these guys, but, you know, they're not always family guys, because they work so hard, and they push everybody to also work hard. So in a way, I aspire to them, and in a way, I very much don't aspire to them. I'd rather my team and my employees say, you know, like, we have fun as one of our values. I've toyed with that being go home, that work hard and then go home. Like, I want you to be with your family. Mm-hmm. So I think most of the drive just comes internally, just from being competitive growing up, playing tennis. That desire to do something, to accomplish something, it's just sort of within me.
Well, when you're 100 years old and you're sitting in your rocking chair and you're looking back upon your life, what do you want your legacy to be for your nephew, for your kids? What do you want them to say when they're walking down the street in a college campus one day and they say, oh, you're Jeff Hillemeyer's son? Tell me. Well, yeah. You know, I didn't believe you were, you know, what do you want them to say?
First of all, what I do tell people is, you know, when you're, you know, 100, you're never going to look back and go, man, I wish I had gone to more meetings gone to more night events. You're going to say, I can't believe I missed my kid's play. Like, oh, I wish I had more. So like, that drives me a lot to say, it guides what I need to be doing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, what do I want people to say? I think at a minimum, I would like people to say that our community, the world, I was better having known or had Jeff around.
Yeah.
Like, I think that would be the thing.
Simple
like,
enough, but effective enough, and certainly
make a positive impact on people's lives.
And, you know, and that's great. That's good. Stay grounded, keep your goals simple, stay focused and motivated, find the inspiration along the way as you need it, but have fun at the same time. Just as we go back to the mission statement of the company, have fun, be positive. I always say that's my attitude on life. My blood type, be positive. Right. So I was in the Army and I had it written on my boots all the time.
I love it.
Always used to come back to me. Just be positive. Be positive. No matter
how
I'm filling sandbags in 125 degree heat, but be positive.
Is that right? Your blood type?
It is.
I wish positive. I knew mine. If I find out it's be positive,
every soldier knows
that.
Their blood type for whatever reason.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
Yeah, you got to know that. So it always resonated with me. I wouldn't be surprised if yours is be positive.
It feels like it must be.
Right. So very good. So another good show, Alex. Any other questions for Jeff or just another good episode here?
No, I think it was great. And I love the fact that you're wearing your shirt, right, with your logo. Is that it? You've got a dragon.
The Dragon Army. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Do you guys know the reference to Dragon Army?
Do not.
Please tell us.
Okay. So Ender's Game is a movie that came out in 2014, but it was it's the most awarded science fiction book of all time.
Never heard of it. Well, I'm not a sci-fi fan, so it doesn't surprise me.
It's a fantastic book, actually. You don't have to be a sci-fi person to really like this particular book, but the idea is it's a futuristic world and Earth is fighting against this alien race. And what's happened is the aliens have been able to outsmart so far the strategies that the Earth's come up with. And so whoever's leading says, we need to have kids coming up with the strategy because they're going to think so creatively that nobody, that the aliens won't be able to anticipate what their next move's going to be because kids think out of the box, right?
Yeah, they're unpredictable.
And so in the book, the premise is they're taking kids and they're training them in this, military camps and stuff to see who the kids could be to lead it. And the kid that ends up becoming the one that's like, this is the one that's going to lead us. His name is Ender. And his team is called Dragon Army. And what they do is, they give him his team and they're like sort of the misfits and they put him there and then they're up against harder teams but they beat him. And then they're like, well, two teams against Dragon Army and then they beat him. And because he thinks outside the box, he thinks differently.
I think I've seen this movie actually. Now that
Harrison
you're talking,
Ford
he
is
he flies
Harrison
around
Ford.
In this thing and they go fight each other. I have seen this.
Yeah. Okay. So Dragon Army was his team. Okay. Yeah. And for us, it's a sort of a mantra that, we're going to think differently. We're going to think creatively. Plus it's also a good name to attract a bunch of technology people to come.
Certainly.
To
and think Dragon.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's a very cool name.
Dragon's Army. And we mentioned to somebody the other day, Jeff Hillemeyer from Dragon Army is coming on. They said, what's Dragon Army? They didn't know.
Right. That's
I bet they went and Googled it.
One of my favorite things is when I go to the chamber board meetings and it's like, Coca-Cola and Georgia Power, and then it's Dragon Army.
I love it. Atlanta is proud to have you part of the community.
They're proud
to have Dragon Army part of the business community and culture here. And also 48 and 48. I wasn't aware that you were the impetus behind that. So wish you much success going forward with that.
Thank you, Dragon Army.
Please come back and be a guest anytime if you have some news to share.
Got it.
Or anything else. So, ladies and gentlemen, CEO and co-founder of Dragon Army, mobile experience agency, Jeff Hillemeyer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. I loved it.
Thank you, Alex, again, for keeping us straight and running the board there. And thank you, audience, for tuning in. If your company is out there, interesting, doing something to serve your market, give us a pitch on our website at businessradiox.com, and we'll have you as a guest here in the studio. Thank you to Stone Payton and Lee Cantor, and on behalf of the entire Business Radio X Network, I'm Ryan Redhawk McPherson. We will see you on the radio.